welcome to episode 182 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Podcast Network. I'm James, joined today by Paul Noonan. Ryan is enjoying a nice vacation, so it's just the two of us sitting here talking about opening weekend against the Twins. And I guess, Paul, how you doing?
fine. Doing better than the Brewer offense is, but not as well as the Brewer pitching. So all in all, pretty good. Yourself?
Nice happy medium in between there, the Brewers pitching and the Brewers hitting.
Indeed.
Yeah, I'd say I'm doing pretty well too. Glad to have baseball back. Wish it was a little bit more exciting. The last Sunday's game was dull, but Saturday's was fun, as fun as a no offense game can be.
I know people are a little panicky right now over today's game especially, but that Burns Berrios pitcher's duel is legit and not just bad Brewer offense. That was a low scoring game. Kind of honestly, Berrios is outstanding in addition to Burns being outstanding. So no reason to panic quite yet. It is what it is.
Right. And we'll get to that in a second. But before we get going, a reminder that you can help support the podcast by becoming a patron at patreon.com/MKETailgate. $2 a month gets your question priority here on the podcast. And for $5 a month, you get the Minor League Extra podcast with Ryan and James Anderson. You also get some reporting as eligible Packers mini pods from Paul through the Packers offseason. All right. So as we sit here, you know, we're doing this Sunday night. Only three games to talk about, that opening series against the Twins. Obviously, Brewers only won one, but the one was an exciting one. It was, you know, opening day. I feel like opening day wins are semi-rare for the Brewers, too. But, you know, they had that late comeback and really exciting finish before dropping the back-to-back games to lose the first series. I guess let's start with the positives. I mean, the offense didn't look bad on that first day. At least, you know, they got some help, obviously, from the Twins.
Right.
You had Colome throw into second base when he shouldn't have with a three-run lead. You had Max Kepler unable to catch a baseball.
play was infuriating for like five different reasons, but yes, ultimately it did help them quite a bit.
Exactly. But I guess the biggest positive that we want to talk about is the starting pitching, right? Like,
yeah.
It's been really good all weekend. Even Adrian Hauser on Sunday, your favorite, did pretty well. Although, you know, as we've talked about, the Twins don't really have lefties, so that wasn't a concern.
Yep,
but
they don't. Nick Cave actually playing because of the injury to Donaldson. I believe he's a lefty, but you know, Hauser did basically what he should do against, you know, this lineup and looked all right. He's your three starter. That's a fine outing from a three starter. So he was good.
But
we should go back to the first game, and it was good. They scored six runs. It's hard to have too many complaints about that, and we should start with Woodruff, actually, but really quick, if I can just throw this out there for future.
Go ahead.
they did get the benefit of a lot of BABIP luck and a lot of duck snorts in that game, too. So to the extent offense is weighing heavily on everybody, it is for me, too, for that reason. It was a good offensive performance, but it wasn't like, you know, everybody mashing all over the park. But aside from that, Woodruff, fantastic. Great start. Kept everything in check. And outdueling Kenta Maeda is always a good thing. He has owned the Brewers a couple times in the past. He's really good. And it's nice to see Woodruff come out and just, you know, be exactly what we expect him to be this season.
Right. He had to grind a little bit in that first game. But again, this is a really good Twins lineup, too. So
yeah.
I think, if anything, that makes the starting pitching even more encouraging, right? Because the Twins are going to mash this year. We saw them mash a little bit today and through this weekend. But yeah, you know, Woodruff, very solid. Corbin Burns, you know, it was like the talk of baseball Twitter all Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, like if you weren't watching the Final Four, I think maybe you were watching that game. Corbin Burns and Jose Berrios just going toe-to-toe. Dude looks electric. And you know I'm like the biggest Corbin Burns fan in the world, so I'm not exactly objective here. But I guess, Paul, what were your impressions of how Corbin looked on Saturday?
I mean, phenomenal. And I think with Corbin, the worry is that maybe last year is not the real Corbin and 2 years ago is. And it was,
right,
we had to kind of check and see if the home run problem was going to rear its ugly head, if he was still as electric as he looked last year, you know, kind of going in full-time starter mode, starting out a full season, if he'd be able to keep that up. I mean, it's game one, but you got to pace yourself a little bit. And,
right,
you know, it, from that game, it looks like he's going to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. So that's a good lineup he's facing. And honestly, an outstanding pitcher's duel. It was one of the best low-scoring games you'll ever see. Just electric stuff from both guys. I do feel a little bad. I jinxed them out of a combined perfect game. Corbin's first walk was on the 26th batter of the game. Actually, maybe the 27th batter of the game. And he got out of it, but we almost saw 27 up, 27 down, which I always enjoy.
You were the one to jinx it, not me this
time. I always pay attention to it because I saw Chris Carpenter and Giovanni Gallardo do it once in person, and it was awesome. it was the most Chris Carpenter, Giovanni Gallardo versions of themselves. Chris Carpenter did in like 42 pitches, and Giovanni did it in like 112 and could not finish the game, obviously. But it's fun. It was such a good performance from everybody on the pitching staff that game. So good.
Yeah, disappointing that Buxton ended up getting him, but I don't think he can be too mad about that. No. And even if you're worried about the home runs coming back, I mean, Byron Buxton showed this weekend he's really freaking good. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. And we mentioned Hauser today, but I guess outside of the starting pitching, I wanted to point out like Josh Hader too on opening day, because I think, early season Hader. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what I want to talk about, because, how I feel like the last year or two, at least, we've been talking about how, his velocity's down early in the year. He's slowly ramping up or whatever. Dude's sitting out here throwing a legit 100. Like, I thought at first it was just hot opening day guns, that kind of thing. But StatCast verified it. Yep. I mean, yeah. So Josh Hader throwing 100. I think I can't remember him throwing that hard ever. Can you?
Absolutely not. I feel like he's always been sort of a mid-90s guy that just benefits from being, so tall and lanky and has that really close to the plate delivery like Randy Johnson used to. And he's a fireballer, but, we've seen guys throw harder. This is all new. So hopefully he can keep that up, because if he can, he's completely untouchable. I mean, you already have no time to react to a Josh Hader pitch. And if you add 4 miles an hour to it, you're just toast. So I think that the Brewers lead the league in miles per hour added so far. If you aggregate all of what people gained off of their averages last year, obviously very small sample size, but whatever work they're doing in the pitching lab seems to have paid off quite a bit already.
Right. I think Woodruff even, did he touch 99 on opening
day?
He did.
He was throwing 99 early.
Yeah. Corbin always throws really hard, but yeah, if you're talking velocity added, I have no idea. And if Josh Hader's throwing 100, I'm suddenly less likely to want to trade him right now, because that's really awesome. But,
His velocity has actually been steadily creeping down the last few years.
Right.
And that's the biggest surprise here is, you see guys get on that trend and, arm damage happens and little things happen. And you rarely see a guy rebound from it absent a serious rehab from an injury that was causing it. It's one thing if a guy has arm soreness or has to go on the DL for a while and comes back and gets some velo. That's one thing. But this is like a 3-year trend reversal where he picked up 5 miles an hour. I can't think of a precedent for it. It's really something.
Right. Yeah. And granted, we're talking one day here. Yeah. So maybe we need to see what he does
probably
rest of this week before we get too carried away. And I think, the thing was Hader and Council both on opening day, they were I didn't realize he was throwing that hard, but obviously maybe it's the having the fans back. I mean, everybody was talking on opening day, just how energized they were by that. So maybe it was a little adrenaline boost there too. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see how that goes going forward. But
yeah,
that's exciting. Unlike the Brewers offense, which has not been exciting. We talked, it's hard to fault him too much for Saturday because Jose Berrios was electric and just as nasty as Corbin Burns.
Also a guy that's picked up a couple of ticks on the radar gun since last year, according to my Twins fans, friends around here. So, another guy who is basically adding a tick makes him untouchable and, probably one of the best pitchers in the AL this year.
Right. And he had kind of a rocky 2020.
He did.
Even if we want to throw that out. But
apparently the book on Berrios before was that he would, if he had a call go against him or an error or anything like that, he would just completely go to pieces. So there's a little bit of mental. I actually feel like Brandon Woodruff's used to be kind of like that.
Oh yeah,
and he would
kind
of fall apart a little bit if he had something go against him. But Barrios has apparently picked up like 1 or 2 miles an hour on his fastball, and they've always said if he can just keep his composure, he's basically unhittable, and that's what we saw. So good for the Twins.
Lucky for him too, CB Buckner was giving both of them a plenty wide strike zone on Saturday as well.
Not a well-called game, as Buckner tends to be. He is the second worst umpire in baseball.
There you go. But Saturday is one thing, but then kind of Sunday, the bats against Michael Pineda didn't look good either. So I guess how worried are you 3 games in, granted, but also knowing that you weren't really excited about the offense at least last year, and maybe had some reservations this year?
I'm not going to overreact to 3 games of subpar offense, but it would have been nice to see a couple more home runs or even extra base hits than they had.
Right.
So
halfway through Sunday before they hit their first home run.
Yeah, and it was Jackie Bradley Jr., who is not exactly a font of power in the game. So, it's early. Guys go through slumps, but coming off of last year where everybody went through a slump for the whole season, it's a little more worrying as a continued trend. Like, the best hitter on the team right now is Travis Shaw, which is not great because that's good.
Maybe Narvaez. Narvaez had a couple of good days, but exactly.
Yeah, and I have stats pulled up right now that don't count today, and some guys had decent days today. But, we did our preview last week, and I think a lot of what we were worrying, well, Shaw's fine, actually. Third base was our second most, but first base, not looking great. Keston Hiura looks terrible. And he's had some time to work through. He's learning a new position, but he looks just completely lost out there. They have no hits from first base. They have one walk, I believe. Yeah, it looks like one walk from first. It's just not great. So it would be one thing if he was like getting unlucky, but he's not. He's just missing stuff and playing terrible defense. He's already made a couple errors over there, and I don't know how long they're going to be able to live with that. If he is destined to take a trip down to the minors to work stuff out, I wouldn't be that surprised at that. If I would fake injury him in 2 seconds at this point.
Keston actually does bring us to our first Patreon question. Comes from Jay Google, of course. So Jay is saying, understanding it's early, when he sent this, it was just 2 games, but there was a third worrisome game added today.
Yes.
He's asking, are we concerned with Hiura and his hitting specifically? He's missed a lot of hittable pitches. So I guess that's kind of the thing that's worrying to me, is that we're still seeing a lot of what we saw last year, where he's cutting through some stuff that's right down the middle.
Yeah.
I feel like Maeda and even Berrios towards the end kind of started hanging some breaking stuff, and he just can't touch it. So I guess, is the stuff swinging and missing in the zone, is that the big worry for you right now?
That's one of them, because he should at least be pounding that stuff. But one of the first things that happened on opening day was, I forget which announcer it was, but said that he'd been making progress in spring training on laying off a high pitch, and literally swung at a high pitch the very next pitch that came through, which maybe you could blame the announcer for doing that. But he seems to have broken no habits. He's been working on laying off that high pitch, and when you do that, like, this is a Corey Hart special. Like, Corey Hart always sucked at hitting breaking balls, and his thing was, okay, you have to identify the breaking ball, and if you see one, don't swing, even if it's a strike, because you can't hit it. Just focus on hitting fastballs and getting ahead in the count. And when he did that, it worked. And here's kind of the same way. He's got to lay off high stuff and be able to punish the stuff when they come down, and he's not doing that. He's not doing either of those things. So it's been a couple of years now of working on this specific problem with no progress. And I mean, they seem committed to him, and it's going to be hard to move on quickly after you move him to a position he's not comfortable with. It's not fair to him necessarily to punish him for failing at that so quickly. You got to give him time to work through it. So I do think he'll be on the roster a while, but you know, if he's a sub 200 hitter and not adding power a month or two from now, they're going to have to do something. And if that's giving Vogelbach a little more time in the meantime, that's fine. But he can't hit lefties, so it's not that fine.
Exactly.
Billy McKinney has 1,000 OPS. Maybe he will still be a force here. Who knows? But I think Hiura will be on kind of a long leash at first. But in 2 months, I think that we'll have a serious reassessment to this.
Right. And it's not even just that this is a bad two games. I mean, we highlighted it last week when we did the season preview that he struck out a ton in spring training.
Yep.
This is also a continuation of last year, like you said, and really like his entire career. Like, he's going to strike out a lot, but it's just the missing the meatballs that is just so irritating to see. Yeah. You know, it's one thing to see like the Berrios stuff where he's tunneling well and the breaking stuff is nuts, but like he's just cutting through garbage right now.
Every time it happens, you see it pop up on Twitter too. Just another hack right through the middle of the zone. Another hack right through the middle of the zone. Like it's kind of infuriating. Right. It's what he's supposed to be good at.
Right.
Focus on
exactly.
That.
Exactly. I even saw some stuff, you know, opening day, they were talking to Mark Adonasio and then David Stearns. And I guess one of his strikeouts was when Stearns was talking. And I didn't have the audio on, but from what I saw on Twitter, it sounded like David Stearns was less than enthused with that at bat for Castañeda, too.
I think that's an accurate thing.
So, yeah, I think you're right that they're going to give him plenty of leash here. Obviously, he's such an important part of that lineup, too. If he's hitting well and like he did his first year, then suddenly this lineup looks a lot better than it does. But again, a lot of last year, the issue was Yelich and Hira not hitting. And if those two guys aren't going, then it's hard for anybody to really get anything going.
That it is.
So I guess the offensive struggles, too, kind of brings me to this point. Like, wasn't the ball supposed to still be kind of juiced? Paul, I know you were like talking in our little group chat about some Rob Arthur research from spring training that showed that maybe the ball was still a little jumpy, but I guess we haven't at least seen that with the Brewers. So what the hell is up with the ball?
All right, so we do have some preliminary ball research from Rob Arthur, who always does ball research, and Ina Saris. And they picked up on a trend in spring training where it looked like teams were front-loading the old balls and then getting to the new balls, and they were able to pick out which ball was which. And now they're very confident in exactly which ball they're using now and what the properties of it are. And if you guys followed what Major League Baseball said they were going for here, it was a dead-end core. And didn't comment on the seams in Eno's article. If you read it, you can actually see him skeptical of baseball because they say they didn't test the seams, which seems insane.
God.
They didn't test drag. They didn't comment on drag. So no one should be surprised that the actual ball seems to be completely the opposite of what Major League Baseball said. It seems to be bouncier at the core level, and exit velocities have actually been higher than they used to be last year and recently as a result of that. So they're coming off bats faster, the exit velocities are up, but they have higher seam height, they have more friction, and they're not flying as far. They're specifically not flying as far in a few certain angle ranges that you... it's like between 30 and 45 degrees. It's like a normal good home run degree. So essentially it's coming off the ball faster. And then if you hit this sort of sweet spot, it's dying. So I think we actually saw this a couple times in the first couple games. The Buxton absolute mashed home run to center field, I think was higher than the drag rate exit launch angle, and so it flew. Like if you look at the exit velos from that game, there were a lot of balls hit about as hard as Buxton hit his, but a lot of them died. And the one that there's a couple that stick out. Arcia sticks out to everybody, but the one that sticks out to me is Yelich's really really crushing hit that I was almost caught out in the outfield by I think Max Kepler. I thought was a home run off his bat. Now that was a little low. It was the launching on that one's like 22 or 23, which is a bit low, but it just died. He destroyed that baseball and it just died out there. And we've seen that a few times with Brewer hitters. So I think that baseball failed in what they were trying to do. What they were trying to do was stupid. They were trying to decrease run production for no good reason. And the theory being they'd have more balls in play, but that's not how any of this works. Strikeouts are up, not a ball in play problems. And I think they're going to have a bit of a dead ball. I think they're going to have fewer home runs and more flyouts. So I'll keep my eye on it, but I know Rob Arthur and Eno are like, well, this is weird. What are they even doing? Do they have any idea what they're doing on this thing?
How do you change the ball and you don't test for all the variables here? Like that. Well, I mean, I asked the question, but I also know it's Major League Baseball.
It's not
so I know
a
that's
secret
the answer.
That seam height was a huge issue. Either they found something they wanted to keep quiet, or I mean, honestly, I have no idea, given the fact that they said they were going to deaden the middle and they didn't even get that right. Who the hell knows what they're doing?
Yeah, it'll be something that we, I guess, need to take a look at. It's just not encouraging that the Brewers couldn't really get the offense going at their home park, and now they're going to April Wrigley and they're going to St. Louis this upcoming week. So two not super friendly hitter environments, yep. At least, you know, this time of year for Chicago. But let's look ahead to the next week. So the Brewers played the Cubs three times this month, which seems insane. I'm going to get really sick of talking about the Cubs by the end of this month.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and then they go to St. Louis next weekend. So the Cubs got off to a 2-1 start, but obviously they played the Pirates, so that barely counts. Cardinals lost 2 of 3 to the Reds, and the Cardinal way already started a bench-clearing brawl in the first weekend. So I did want to bring that up, because any chance to talk about how dumb and irritating Yadi Molina is cool with me. So, Paul, did you see how this thing started?
I did not see it. I just saw that Nick Castellanos was involved, which is always a fun thing now, because of Twitter memes. But Nick Castellanos got hit, right? And then he got revenge.
So, yes. So he got hit, and then he picked up the ball and offered it back to the pitcher, which already kind of rubbed the Cardinals the wrong way.
Yeah, that's not playing the game the right way, Nick.
Sorry. Right. And like, the precursor to all of this is, I guess, the night before he had a little bat flip during a home run. So, of course, the Cardinals got a little pissy about that. So next day he gets hit. He offers the ball back. Okay, fine. And then he gets back. Obviously he's on base. He comes around to score, and he scores on I think it was a wild pitch, and the pitcher was covering at home, and he flexes over the pitcher after scoring. Seemed to be fine. He was walking away when Yadi Molina comes like screaming like a bat out of hell behind to chase him down as he was walking away to start yelling at him. Always. So the fight started after he already started walking. Yeah, away.
Always good to escalate things. The Cardinals are good at that.
It was Yadi's fault. Yeah. Although Nick Castellanos did have a good quote after the game too. He still likes Yadi, apparently. He was saying the dude could punch me in the face and I'd still ask him for an autograph or something like that. So there you go. But I'm already irritated with the Cardinals, and it's been three games. So
they're really Cardinals-ing it up. They're doing great.
This will be a great weekend. But I guess looking ahead, Cubs, are you worried at all about the series? Or is this going to be a better barometer of where they stand, I guess, now that they're playing division games this week?
I suppose it is. Like, so
the Twins.
The Twins are – we should just – give this. The Twins are really good. They're going to be one of the best teams in the AL. They have a great lineup. They have great pitching. The Cubs are pretty average by projections, by what we know them to be. And this probably will be a better barometer. Like, if the Brewers still struggle to put up runs against, the Cubs aren't bereft of good pitching. They have some, but they also have a bunch that isn't good, and they'll have some opportunities to score runs here. If they go, 0 for the series again, then it's time to worry a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see how sort of the back end of the Brewer rotation does as well against a non-juggernaut team. So I think this will be a better barometer for the Brewer depth, for the Brewer offense. Not so much Woody and Corbin. I think we know what we got there. So, this should be a truer, this less playoffy, more just your average summer baseball game, which I think is a better barometer for the whole season than going into the Twins aren't a rival, but kind of a rival and a very good one.
Right, and I think for the Brewers' offense sake, maybe we cross our fingers that the wind is blowing out for a game or two, because if they get that jet stream rolling in, I think it's going to be trouble for both teams trying to score. But I think you're absolutely right too. Seeing, how Brett Anderson and the rest of the back of the rotation does is going to be kind of the key thing to look for this week. I'm sure he'll be fine the first series, because the Cubs don't really scare me at all. And I say that now, and of course they're probably going to sweep the Brewers now, but that's how that works.
I think you should be worried. You got to be worried about the Brewers in every series, because I think their bats can go quiet in every series, no matter how bad the opponent is, and that's the scary thing about them. It happened plenty last year.
Right, and that's the risk of trying to load up on the pitching and defense thing that they've tried to do this year, right?
Exactly.
At any given day, you're going to get shut out 2-0 occasionally when you shouldn't lose that game. But we'll keep our fingers crossed. Hopefully they get some runs against the division rivals and less quality opponents.
Hopefully so.
We do have a couple other Patreon questions to get to. So we've got Adam Post. He's asking, how long will the Brewers be able to continue keeping 14 position players on the roster? So they started the year with 14 bats, 12 pitchers. They've had some, they had the early off day to kind of help recharge arms. But, you know, we've seen Craig Counsell use, you know, Freddie Peralta, Josh Lindblom for multiple innings so far already. I guess, how long do you see them keeping this extra bat, aka, like, how long is Big Dan still on the roster?
Or somebody else. I mean, if things go south with Keston, Dan gets a little more valuable there. But I think that the extra position player is a short-term thing based on just early season days off, and I don't think it'll last for too long. I think this is, to some extent, a tryout for a couple of guys to actually get hot and make something of themselves, because a pitcher will be up sooner rather than later. They are going to... You know, when you start the season, you get to rely on Woody and Burns to go a little further than you might otherwise have them go. Everybody's fresh. You do get the off day. And as soon as they get to normal baseball, where, you know, the back end is getting them in some trouble, they're leaning more heavily on the bullpen, and they have to cycle through more relievers to get through games, they're going to get into that situation where they need an arm or two. And as soon as that happens, somebody's going. So I give it maybe a week and a half, not very long. Whenever you think regular baseball takes hold, that's it. And that's going to be pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, they've been fortunate so far, at least through three games where they haven't really had a blow up short start where they've needed to really empty out the bullpen.
I mean,
if they get one of these this week, they're going to have to make that move.
They probably would have already had to react had we been under the old extra inning rule that actually has benefited them already once. So
right, exactly.
That's
which, by the way, I'm glad Lorenzo Cain's back just for that rule, right? Because he's like the perfect guy to have on second base to start that inning.
He's
a really good base runner. First of all, he's smart. He knows the situational aspects of everything. You know, the only other base runner I'd rather have is Christian Yelich on second base, but obviously you want him to hit during that inning if his spot's coming up.
Exactly.
So definitely a benefit to the Brewers already. And also helpful that they had Josh Hader to throw out in the 10th where, you know, base runners don't matter. All right. So kind of along the pitching questions, Philip Schumacher's got a couple here. He says, David Stern said this week they would be creative with starting pitching, and the teams with fresh pitchers in September will be the ones that will be successful. How do you think the Brewers manage their starters throughout the season? A simple innings quota each month or quarter of the season, or will they use more advanced analytics that examine how pitchers trend from start to start, and if there are early signs of fatigue? So I know we've kind of touched on this subject a little bit already, but I guess, Paul, like, all of the above, or what are you thinking?
I don't think they'll have really specific quotas with anybody, and I actually don't think that they'll have to change as much as a lot of other teams do to get through the season, because they really do keep people on short leashes as a matter of habit anyway. The one place you might see a change is with the two guys at the top, and I do think they'll probably, even if Woody and Burns are cruising along, once they get to like 90-ish, I suspect they'll get yanked, even if they have like no hitters or whatnot going on. But everybody else, you know, they really do protect them from going through the order three times, and that tends to keep their pitch counts down. Not everybody operates that way, so I think it'll mostly be that. They'll have a cap on the guys that can actually go deep, at least for a little while. But everybody else, I think, will have leash to go. The other place you might see it impact them is just on multi-inning relief appearances, and I think that'll be an interesting thing to see as the season plays on. They did stretch a bunch of guys out to do that, but it is kind of a double-edged sword. It lets you get through more games without taxing your starters, but it does tax your relievers quite a bit more to leave them out there routinely for more than one inning, especially if you have to go to them multiple days in a row or in quick succession. So I do wonder how much they will lean on that and with who. And I think that's where they'll have to get a little bit creative tactically. But in terms of starters and like your basic pitchers, I think that the way they normally play kind of plays to this anyway, and it won't really change them too much.
Right. And that's a really good point. I'm really interested to see how the multi-inning bullpen guys react, once we get into their second or third or fourth appearances of doing that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so far it's gone pretty well outside of, you know, Drew Rasmussen getting unlucky with, you know, Keston Hira's defense kind of extending an inning there.
Poor Drew.
He should have had a double play ball, and instead it ended up being a blow-up inning. But
did Freddie do multiple innings, or am I just imagining he did multiple innings because he took like 800 pitches to get through it?
I don't remember, actually.
He had a very Freddie outing where he got himself in danger constantly, and I don't remember how it went.
No, I'm pretty sure he pitched multiple innings.
Yeah, I think he did.
I was surprised to see him on opening day. I thought that, you know, in the fifth starter mix, but obviously with the day off, you could throw him opening day and be fine. But yeah, those multi-inning guys, and you know, we talked about it in the pitching preview too. It's going to take some extra work from Craig Counsell to kind of make sure everybody stays fresh doing that too. You know, you got to think ahead a couple of extra steps to make sure that you get those guys the rest that they need. Philip has another pitching question. He says, we've heard the rule of thumb that the starter's inning ceiling is about 100 innings more than last year. Any thoughts on what the innings or usage cap will be on relievers through the season and how they may be managed differently in a normal year? So, you know, kind of what we were talking about. Is there an innings limit for a reliever, do you think?
So I doubt there's an innings limit. It's hard to track that and pace for that, but I do think there'll be more concerned than they usually are about going back-to-back days and about leaving guys out there as long as they usually do. And I think that's where it really gets tricky for them. On starters, they do keep guys on a pretty short leash, but relievers, they push. And, you know, that's where things get dicey for them. It's where you're pushing your pitchers that this is kind of untested waters. I think they'll manage that mostly by cycling guys through with strategic minors call-ups and things like that. But I do think you'll see less dated back-to-back games than you usually do, and that's how they'll mostly manage it. You might see more games thrown away than normal when they get behind for that reason too. They might be a little more quicker to punt than they normally would. I would actually really like to know what their internals are on when to punt a game, and what they, if any, have adjusted for this season. That's one too, but I don't think an innings cap, but I think they'll be very careful about repeated usage for everybody.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up the punting, because we saw Josh Lindblom after the game kind of got away today, and it's sort of like, okay, well, he's basically a starter. Just throw the rest of the game, Josh, and we'll get through this down 8-2 or whatever. Yep. But, you know, Craig's never been shy about punting those games and not throwing good money after bad, as you always say, right? So we'll see those. And really, like, those punting pitchers are the ones that are going to be cycled out a lot more than, you know, the guys that they count on to in games that they're leading.
Exactly.
So, I do think like the innings totals for guys like Freddie are going to be maybe more interesting, because he's kind of on that starter reliever bridge there. But I would still say, you know, 100 innings for the starters over last year. Obviously, you're not going to get a reliever to throw 100 innings, but, you know, you can manage those days off a little bit more and shuffle around paper injured list stints and that kind of thing, too. So,
yep, indeed.
All right. We also have a Twitter question. We put out a call for questions on our Twitter account as well. It's at MKE Tailgate. You should give that a follow. So even if you're not a patron, you can just reply to that tweet with your question. You can also tweet your questions to us individually. Paul is at Badger Noonan. I'm at James L. So Twitter question we got this week is from Sean McElmeel. He says, where do the Brewers rank in terms of swings at pitches outside of the strike zone? We talked about guys cutting and missing on inside the zone pitches, but also outside of the strike zone. He's asking, can they break it down just by barely out of the zone or way out of the zone? And what can or do teams and coaches do to improve on that? It seems like the Brewers are always really bad at swinging outside of the zone.
All right. So I have numbers if you don't.
I pulled some up too, but you go.
All right. So I grabbed Baseball Savants. For some reason that I don't quite understand, FanGraphs actually cuts off in 2018 for this question. Maybe they just didn't care to track the weird season, but I do have 2019. Oh, it didn't change. I have 2020 numbers. That's not helpful at all. I'm having trouble with Baseball Savant tonight, apparently. Well, I can do this season. So in this very short season so far, they actually don't swing outside of the zone much more than any other team. They're actually in the upper half in not chasing pitches. Mm. They are, however, terrible at making contact with pitches outside of the zone. They're in this short season so far, since 2019 is not flipping up for me, they actually have the worst contact rate on pitches outside of the zone. So when they do hack, they're not making anything happen at all. And Baseball Savant, maybe it works better when you're not using it in the middle of a podcast like I am, but it does have it does have outside zone versus edge, and edge is the close pitch. So you can actually look that up, but it's not working great, and it's the wrong spreadsheet anyway. So their edge percentage is about the same as their contact percentage. So they don't seem to be that much worse. Three-game sample. I'll look up 2019 later if I can. 2019 stats, by the way, can be a little tricky to find on some of the advanced stuff just because it was a weird season, hard to track, hard to have people around. So, but I really don't think the Brewers are that much worse at it than most other teams. It's just one of those things where the team you follow, you notice mistakes a little bit more than everybody else. And when they swing, when they make bad swings, you know, it sticks in your head. Honestly, I'm more infuriated by things like Keston Hira swinging at pitches down the middle and not getting anything on them than I right. am anything else. So I don't really think they chase that much. And if they have a problem, it's that they just miss terribly more than anything.
Right. Yeah. And I guess maybe I'm more forgiving than I used to be on the pitches outside of the strike zone, because I've just watched too many pitching ninja gifts to really like feel too strongly about batters flailing, because like tunneling is so good now that you don't know where it's going to end up when you start swinging half the time. And so if you end up flailing at a crazy slider outside of the zone, like I can't fault you too much on that. Yeah. I'm with you. It's the hacking on the meatballs right down the middle, because like, what are you looking for the pitch out of the zone and you just missed, or is your angle just all messed up? I mean, it's not even just Hira. You know, we saw like Avi Garcia today whiff on one. Like, you know, Yelich has been missing still on a lot of hangers. And it's just, I mean, but like you said, those are the ones that stick out because they seem so obvious and are doubly frustrating.
Yeah,
but
I mean, the Brewers strike out a lot. That's definitely true. And I'm sure that part of that is chasing bad pitches. But they're just not a good contact team, generally speaking. Like, they don't always make great contact in zone pitches. And, you know, they're a swing for the fences kind of team, or just a bad at offense kind of team. They're that dichotomy. I mean, it's your Urias and Arcias who haven't come around yet, and Yelich, and not much in between the two. So it's a problem, but I think the problem is more just how they're built. And you're going to have those bursts of offense, and you're going to have the everything going to sleep for a while and not much in between.
So I take it you don't believe Orlando Arcia is the most clutch Brewer of the past 20 years based on opening day?
He is not, although he is he is over his career good at hitting with runners in scoring position and two outs. So I did look up that split. He's also, as this podcast has said many times, excellent at hitting with either a four-run deficit or a four-run lead. In fact, his best split that you can find on Baseball Reference is, in fact, that split. He is best when the game doesn't matter. Our observations are true.
Also, we were saying he probably doesn't deserve the credit for the opening day win, because that was all Lorenzo Cain breaking at the right time on the chopper to home plate, right? It was technically a fielder's choice, and he beat the throw, and that was all O'Kane. But I will just jump on the theory of Orlando Arcia being somehow awesome in those situations and against the Cubs. For whatever reason, like, he sucks against everybody else, but Cubs fans swear he's a 800 hitter against them, because those are the games that he also does it. But so maybe a series against the Cubs gets the offense going. We'll see.
Yeah,
fingers crossed. Absolutely. That's all we really have for questions this week. Obviously, with just the two of us, not a whole lot of stuff to go around, and we're missing Ryan's opinions on things. But you know, we still wanted to do this holiday included to kind of get the first weekend in. So we'll wrap things up, a quick and tidy opening weekend episode.
Indeed.
And obviously, we don't want to spring to too many conclusions based on just a few games. So we'll be back next week. Ryan will be back next week. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, anywhere else you listen to the podcast. Please do hit that subscribe button. And while you're there, please leave us a review. Oh, I almost forgot. Yep. I did dig up some good reviews because we promised we were going to do this. So our most recent one, Paul, do you want to read it?
Yeah. So, just to set the stage here, I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago. One of us, I assume it was Ryan, dared people to leave bad reviews, in which I said, no, don't do that. We will ignore them. But if you leave a good review, I will read it, just to incentivize y'all to do that. And he did. So thank you for that. And so I will read one. We have from Colin PC, who said, please read this, Paul. Thank you for asking. Please read this, Paul. Best Brewer podcast. So there you go. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it. Appreciate the support. Right. More 5-star reviews. Really keep doing that. Helps us go up the charts, helps us get more readers, etc. So, and we have one, we have another, a bit of an oldie here. Is that what we're looking from October, yeah. From NJ Brew Crew. Never heard a group of people know more about baseball while simultaneously having no idea how to pronounce anyone's name. And yeah, that's, you are right.
I think that tracks with between you and Ryan.
Yep.
My favorite part of the football podcast, by the way, is Paul slaughtering everybody's names. Yannick Ngakoue. I'm sad he's not a Viking anymore for that reason.
One of the big secrets of my life is that I actually almost never have the announcers turned on. And so the way I experience player names is almost entirely by reading them and not hearing them. So I literally never know how anybody's pronounced until somebody makes me listen to it at some point.
Yeah, so we struggle with that. Ryan struggles with the patron names. So if you sign up to become a patron, I would say no guarantee he gets your name right on the air, but we'll give you a shout out anyway. Yeah. So there you go. I'll take that. We know about baseball and don't know how to say people's names. I think that's a fair, good 5-star review too. So again, a reminder, go and leave us a review. And if it's a good one, we'll read it on the air. Why not? Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we'll be back next week. We'll take a look at that first full week of games. Ryan will be back with us. Until then, stay well, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Milwaukee's Tailgate.